Hey everybody, I'm Andy and this is Uncut with Andy Diamond. And today I've got Candace Dornstouter with me. She is a nurse practitioner with Dr. Deanna Ohms at Balanced Rejuvenation. And we are going to be talking about a super hot topic. And so let's go. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So today we're going to be talking about everybody's favorite new weight loss medication, Ozempic or semaglutide. And obviously, it is quite a controversial topic right now. There's so much that we're going to unpack in today's session. And so let's just dive right in.
Okay.
So tell us all about it. Tell us from a medical perspective, what is Ozempic, semaglutide? What is it? What does it actually do?
Okay. So when you ask somebody who's medical that question, we have to decide how far we get into the medical piece.
Right,
and
right.
The pharmacokinetics and the biochemistry and all of those things. A lot of people think that this is new, and the interesting thing is that it's not really new.
Yeah.
So this is based off of a hormone that was discovered in the 1930s called incretin. Incretin is a hormone that helps your pancreas stimulate the release of insulin. Okay. And so when they discovered that, as they were talking about digestion and how people's bodies work, they were like, oh, this is interesting. This helps control blood sugar. So when we eat foods that contain sugar or break down into sugars, incretin is what is used to help the cells process that sugar. And so when they discovered that, they started looking into how can we make chemicals and medications that are going to act like an incretin and help the body. Those are called incretin mimetics. Those were used in around 2005 to help manage diabetes. And incretin mimetics later on, with more and more development, more knowledge and more research, became something called glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonists.
Okay.
So the formal name of these drugs in their category is glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonist. That means that that medication acts like an incretin and it operates on the receptors of the cells where that incretin would go. So you're supplying your body with a little extra kick of this medication that naturally stimulates the production of insulin and the use of sugar in the body.
And so how long, first of all, this is an FDA approved medication.
Yes, yes it is. But the way that the FDA approves it based on the companies that develop the medications is under what we call brand names. So Ozempic is actually approved for the management of type 2 diabetes.
Okay.
And its partner drug, Wegovy, is actually the medication that is approved to deal with weight management.
And so from what I have been learning and what I've been reading about, this has been a hot medication for over 10 years now. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in the past couple of years, when celebrities really started talking about it, is when it started gaining traction with the general population.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And then there's also, as I was saying, when it's a company that develops the medication and brands it, it takes some time for us to be able to access and use the generic version, which is really just the pure chemical form. So Ozempic, Wegovy are actually something called semaglutide.
Okay.
Just like Tylenol is acetaminophen and ibuprofen is Advil. So those names get interchanged a lot and it can sound very confusing, but the chemical generic name of semaglutide, or for some other medications, tirzepatide or liraglutide, are the ones that you'll hear. And we started seeing more of this as these medications were being developed. When they're first being developed, there's a lot of research development and a lot of work that goes into finding out what are these medications and how do they work. And so they are kind of inaccessible when they're at that level. They become very expensive.
Expensive, yeah.
And so that's part of the reason why they've been around a long time, but they were not as well known. And then it sort of starts filtering out to those who have the means to get the access to the medications. And, you know,
it's expensive.
Yeah, it's very expensive. And it certainly was even more expensive when it first was available. So unless you had a serious medical condition that merited the treatment, it was something that you would have to pay more for. And therefore, it's people who have access, like celebrities.
Celebrities.
So when we see celebrities, you know, out there, you know, all of a sudden people who, you know, struggle with their weight, you know, Oprah and Tracy Morgan, the comedian, Chelsea Handler has talked about using
about it.
Mm-hmm. Sharon Osbourne, you were talking about
Kelly Osbourne.
Kelly Osbourne. So you see them using it because they have the financial means to access it, and you see them succeeding with it. And the rest of us are like, hey, you know, why can't we have some of that too? You know, it looks good. They've been using it for a while. It looks safe. The other thing is that when a medication's available over a longer period of time, you have more research, more information, a longer period of time to assess side effects, long-term effects, adverse events. And from a medical provider perspective, that gives us a lot more information and confidence about how do I, as a medical person, use this safely with my patients? Because that's always my priority. I want to make sure that I am never going to use anything that's going to endanger my patients. I need to have as much information as possible about how it works, what it does, what I need to watch out for. And so, you know, the more information we have, the more comfortable we are saying to our patients, yeah, actually, this looks like it could be something that would be helpful for you.
So if somebody has struggled with their weight, or not even struggled with their weight, but maybe, you know, over a certain period of time, they've noticed everything that they're doing in their life is the same, but suddenly weight starts creeping on. And I think as we start getting older, we notice that happening. So say a woman who is in menopause mm-hmm. starts noticing, okay, everything in my life I'm doing the same. I didn't just all of a sudden start sitting on the couch and eating ho-hos and ding-dongs all day long. Would this be something that would be indicated for a woman in that stage of life?
Yeah, it certainly can be. And you're right. Our metabolism slows down as we age. Our hormones aren't as active as they used to be. There are other means of managing that with hormone balancing and things. But I call this the, if I'm doing everything right, why isn't it working kind of conundrum? Like, here I am doing all the things. And sometimes the harder I exercise, it seems like the less it's working. You know, and so what kinds of things can we do that, you know, will help people get back through that, just kind of get over that hill, get through that plateau, whatever it might be that's really slowing them down. And this medication, the way that it works.
That's what I was going to say. Tell me how it actually works.
Yeah, and this is the key difference with this medication that I think is really important to understand. It works in what we think is three different ways. So one, like I was saying, it helps the body stimulate the release of insulin, which then helps the body better use blood sugar that's circulating. So your muscles are able to take in that energy and use it more effectively. Your body's able to process it. You're able to keep the blood sugar a little bit lower, which is overall much healthier.
Okay.
The other interesting thing is that it slows down the GI system. This is a double-edged sword. We'll talk more about that with
please.
Side effects.
Yes.
But slowing down the GI system has an effect that we call increasing satiety. Increasing satiety means you feel fuller longer. So the your body just isn't moving that food through as quickly, and you feel pretty good. You feel pretty content with smaller amounts of food for a longer period of time. The other thing that it does that's really interesting is it works in the brain, and it communicates with the signals in the brain that stimulate your appetite. So it's actually decreasing that in that level of appetite. So you're not feeling hungry as often. And that's different than the slowing of the GI system. So it's really hitting three target areas.
It's doing it all.
And there is some speculation that it also helps decrease cravings. There's some research going into, which right now is very anecdotal. If you look it up, you'll find it, but it's not kind of widely looked at right now, that it helps decrease alcohol and maybe nicotine or drug cravings.
Really?
So there's some work going on around that. It might be very
interesting
what comes out.
Yeah.
But it does act on three different pathways, which is a really nice kind of systemic way of looking at appetite and control. So when you've got these women who are perimenopausal, menopausal, men similar experience, you know, things slow down, just anybody who's kind of struggling with back in the day, if I wanted to drop a few pounds, I just hit the gym and it worked. Or I, you know, lived on chicken, rice, and veggies for a few days and it worked. Why isn't that working anymore? Well, it could be a variety of things: age and metabolism, hormones,
and our food sucks.
Our cortisol levels, our stress levels, our food may be different than what it was, but there's also insulin resistance and inflammation. So this really helps overcome a lot of those barriers. It's kind of like watching a hurdler run down the track and they're just kind of going over each of the obstacles and it's just getting you through it. So just a little bit of a punch.
And so who would this be contraindicated for? Who should not go on Ozempic or semaglutide?
Yeah. So people, first of all, there is an FDA black box warning. So this is something we really need to make sure that we're aware of. In studies with rodents, it showed a tendency to increase the incidence or increase reoccurrence of thyroid cancers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So thyroid C-cell tumors, medullary cancers, or a syndrome called multi-endocrine neoplasms type 2. So anybody who has like significant thyroid history or thyroid cancer history really needs to be very, very careful with this. Okay. There's not a lot of evidence that it actually caused it, but it was there in the studies, so we're very careful. The other thing is people, you know, who have a history of pancreatic disease. It can trigger pancreatic symptoms or pancreatic disease. Gallbladder disease, gallstones, that's the kind of thing that it can trigger as well. People who use medications like warfarin, it can affect the absorption time because of that slowing down of the GI system. You need to be really careful and talk with your doctor about other medications you take to make sure that you're not negatively affecting how they work in your body. People who have a history of serious gastrointestinal disease, if you have slow bowel motility, IBS with constipation, if you have a history of gastroparesis, because again, that slowing of the GI system can cause what we call intestinal blockages and ileuses.
Oh, okay.
And that's really dangerous. So okay. We want to make sure that you're using this safely under the guidance of a medical professional to avoid having any of these issues. The other thing is that we always pay close attention to how does the body use the medication and how does it eliminate it? So how does it get rid of anything it's not using? And that goes through the kidneys. So we have to watch the kidney function, and anybody who has significant renal disease or kidney compromise needs to be careful of it.
So when somebody is on this medication, first of all, for people who don't know, it's an injection.
It is,
right?
Yes.
You do it at home. You do it at your practitioner's office.
You can do it either way. So in our practice, for example, you would get to choose between having the injections in the office versus having your bottle available and being taught how to do the injections and then doing it weekly at home. There is an oral form available semaglutide,
okay.
But it's more impacted by the digestive process and what we call the first pass effect. So it's not as popular and it's not as well used because it doesn't really have a lot of advantages over other options. But this is an injectable medication, and we're really careful to teach people how to do that properly in the right places and how to manage that.
And so how do you guarantee, and maybe you can educate me on this, are you losing fat, muscle, all of the above? You know, how do you ensure, because most people don't want to lose muscle.
Right. And that is a risk that we want to avoid too. As healthcare providers, we're very careful to try to monitor what type of weight loss you're experiencing. So there's a condition called sarcopenia, and that is where you lose more than 30% of your lean muscle mass. And we want to avoid that.
Sure.
So the important thing is that, yes, you can lose muscle mass with this medication. And certainly if you're not prepared and understanding how it's going to act in your body and the type of plan that you need to manage it safely, that can happen. So what we want to see is we want to see that fat loss, right? We want to get rid of that high body fat. We want to preserve that lean muscle mass. And then for long term, we also want to make sure your bone density is good and your hydration status is good. Because again, that goes back to that renal function, your kidneys. They need that hydration. So the best way to monitor that, and one of the strongest recommendations, is making sure that you are doing a body composition analysis.
Okay.
You need a special kind of scale that is able to measure and detect how much of the tissue, the mass in your body, is fat, muscle, bone, and hydration.
Okay.
And so if we're measuring that on a regular basis, we can see if you start to dip into an area that's concerning. So we can say, whoa, okay, so now you've been on this med for a little bit, things were going great, but it looks like you're really starting to kind of lose more of that muscle mass, or that might happen initially because people just kind of go all in and they get a little too excited
aggressive
about things, and maybe they're not doing the right kinds of exercise or getting the right kinds of nutrition. So
people should continue exercising. You don't have to stop exercising or anything.
That leads to a really good point. So I think it's important to know that the kind of exercise you do is really important. When you're on this medication, it is not advised that you dive into going to the gym every day or even 5 or 6 days a week, going hardcore on the cardio. What we want to see is people focusing on weight-bearing exercises and strength training.
Okay.
Because that's going to give you a caloric burn, it's going to preserve your muscle mass, and it's going to protect your bones. if you dive into heavy duty cardio and you're just burning calories, you're going to develop a huge calorie deficit. And that pushes your body the opposite direction. When your body detects that, it's like, whoa, things are way out of balance. I'm starving. I need to hang on to everything. And I think about it this way. The exercise and nutrition piece is so critical because you have less of an appetite, because it will start pushing energy through your cells faster. You need to make sure that every calorie you take in is valuable calories. Sure. We have no room for empty calories. So when people say, I can eat junk food, I can eat whatever I want, and I still lose weight, that may be true, but you are probably damaging your muscle mass afterwards. And your bones. Because if you don't take in good nutrition, what does your body have to use? Your body has no resources. So where does it look for that? It can't go anywhere else. It's going to start taking from inside. It's going to start breaking down muscle, which is what we call catabolism, or it's going to start breaking down bone. Because it's got to have those resources, that nutrition, those minerals, those vitamins. It needs that to do its day-to-day function. So it's going to start breaking down itself. So we try to really stress to people, is it possible to lose weight while you eat junk food? Sure, but you're going to pay for that. You're going to feel terrible, and you may experience some pretty significant side effects or long-term effects with that.
So from the time somebody first goes on the medication, what can they expect? Like within the, when do they start seeing results? How quickly should they start seeing results? And what's a safe amount of time for somebody to be on this medication? Do they stay on it forever? Do they stay on it for 6 months, a year? Like what is the expectation, and who is deciding how much weight this person should lose?
There's a lot in that question.
Okay. Yeah, so I know. I get excited.
We might have to go back to some of it. Let's focus on goals. So how do you decide what my goal is?
Right. Like who determines that? Does the patient determine that, or does the provider determine that?
I like partnerships.
Okay.
You know, I really believe in working collaboratively.
I knew what you were trying to say.
I think it's really important that as a clinical provider, what we are looking at, and I always say we're so great because we love people from the inside out. You know, we really care about what's on your inside. We're not so concerned about your outsides, but your insides, all that matters to me.
Sure.
So when I'm looking at that and I look at my patients, I look at things like, do they have heart disease? Do they have dyslipidemia, which is cholesterol and lipid problems? Are they pre-diabetic? Do they have metabolic syndrome? Are they experiencing medical conditions or maybe on the verge of medical conditions that I know as a provider may cause them to have complications, poor function in the future? So that's going to be my perspective when I come to the table.
So holistically, you're looking at the entire person.
Yes. And then the patient's coming and saying, I hate wearing a bathing suit. I really just feel terrible.
I want to lose 10 pounds, 20 pounds, 50
pounds,
whatever.
I've got to go to a wedding, a graduation, whatever your goals might be. So we have that conversation. So from the clinical part, your provider is going to look at the things that I want to avoid you having problems in the future. I want to try and minimize any medical conditions you currently have and maybe even resolve them. A lot of things can be resolved with, you know, really structured weight loss.
Sure.
So when we have that conversation, what I like to remind people of is it's not just a number on a scale. What you should look at is, you know, think back, is there a time when you felt really healthy? And you felt like you were really, you know, in your prime. What did that look like for you? What were you able to do? How did you dress?
I was in my 20s.
You know, and I've had periods of that over my lifetime in my teens and in my 20s and in my 30s and even my 40s where I felt better than other times. So I like to remind myself, like, what kinds of things was I doing when I felt really good? And I like people to describe their goals and their health that way, because then it doesn't attach itself so much to the number on the scale, because that can be really defeating for a lot of people. And I want to give people the win, right? So if you say, well, I really want to hit this number on the scale, but I feel really good when I can go out and do like a little light jogging, you know, take my dog out, or when I can go on a long hike with my grandkids or something like that. And so if we attach a feeling and more of a doing action-based rather than a number on a scale, it tends to be more successful. And then we always try to stick within clinical indications for what is safe. There's a lot of talk in the medical community about the BMI, the body mass index. There's a lot of things that are problematic about it, but it is something we use just as a straight up clinical measure. So one of the indications for the medication for weight management is a BMI over 30.
Okay.
And if it's not over 30, a BMI equal to or above 27 with a coexisting medical condition. So heart disease,
diabetes,
high and rising A1C, which is your glycated hemoglobin. It's a look back over time where over 90 days we can see how much sugar was in your blood. So we can historically see, and it's a good predictor for future problems, future diabetes. And they say often pre-diabetes, check your hemoglobin A1C. So those kinds of numbers are the kinds of things we're going to look at and say, well, could we bring down that BMI? Could we improve the lipid profile? Can we bring down that A1C? Those are the kinds of things we want to look at for goals in deciding how much weight we want to see people lose. And then I also tell people, you know, go where you feel good. It's, you know, not everybody is going to get to their recommended BMI, but they might feel healthy and strong and be okay clinically.
And so, okay, so I know I asked a lot of things in that last question. So going back, when do people start seeing results?
Right.
How quickly does it work? Because I also know that you don't want to drop weight really fast.
Yeah.
You know, you want it to be something that you can sustain also.
Yeah.
Right?
So the training that I received, specialized training on how to use this medication, was from the American Association for Anti-Aging Medicine. And they have, so it's called A4M for short. And they have been working, the doctors who kind of do all the education pieces on this have been using this medication for over a decade, participating in trials and using it with diabetics and people of high risk. And their recommendation for the best and long-term success is to start low and go slow. So as hard as it is, because I know when we make the decision,
you're like, I'm all in.
I want to do it. I'm going to do it. And I got to dump 20 pounds this month. But the truth is, the way that you combat the stories you hear about terrible side effects and terrible
problems. Yes, because I want to talk more about side effects too.
Is to let your body slowly adjust to having this medication available. Because like I said, it's going to mimic natural processes in your body.
Okay.
And your body doesn't just make radical shifts. Your body likes to slowly change things over time. Homeostasis, it's about balance. So the recommendation for how you start the medication is to actually start with very slow, very small dosing and allow your body to acclimatize to it. And during that 2 to 3, 4 week period, that's when we implement lifestyle, diet, nutrition changes, start managing plan. It's the best way to avoid side effects and problems going forward.
Baby steps.
Yeah. Baby step it out. Because even though it's hard to say, I want to take my time with this, you're going to be far more successful, feel better, and be able to stick with it longer. I think you had mentioned in an earlier question about how long can you take it.
Yes.
So if we set a goal, you know, we want to reach X, you know, these values for your clinical measures and this number with the scale, and you reach your feeling and activity goals, and you say, okay, you know, how long is that going to take? Each person's going to be a little bit different.
Sure.
But there are a lot of studies that have shown that this is a safe medication to use over the long term. Like, there's studies going on over 2 years where people have been using it consecutively that long, and it's proven to be safe.
So do they start off slow, get to whatever dosage they need, and then once they get to the weight that is their personal goal, then they back off of the medication and stay at like a maintenance dose?
Yes, that's exactly what we do.
Okay.
So we increase it slowly until you hit the goal of a 2 to 4 pound a week loss, depending on how well you tolerate it. And then we stick with that. Now that can be adjusted based on symptoms. So if everything's going along, but you know, maybe I just don't feel as good, or having more nausea, or I'm having more bloating or anything like that,
so
back it off a little bit.
So what are side effects? So nausea?
So most of the side effects with the medications are gastrointestinal upset. So some nausea, some abdominal discomfort, gas, bloating, belching is one of the things kind of people say is mildly irritating. It can cause constipation, which is one thing to worry about with those slow bowels. We really got to make sure that people are still eliminating their food properly. And so
pooping.
Yes. It's important. I mean, and when you
everybody
think about
poops.
It, it's the only way that your body excretes toxins is through urine and feces.
Okay.
So we really need to make sure those things are working properly. And we don't want it to slow down and cause that blockage in ileus, because that can be a really serious problem. So the side effects, other than the gas, and there is some people who experience nausea, vomiting, occasionally diarrhea, but okay. It's usually more along the constipation line. And then the other things are things like what I was mentioning earlier. It can trigger gallstones.
Oh.
It can, so you have to be careful if you have gallbladder disease. It can trigger pancreatitis, which is kind of about the balance of fats and acids in your system. So we want to watch carefully for that. There's most commonly people say injection site irritation. So redness, itching, little soreness around where you inject it. Usually there's, you know, anybody who has a reaction to incretins and incretin mimetics, you want to avoid that. They always say that if you're allergic to the medication, don't take the medication.
Yeah.
It seems obvious, but
I see people that in commercials and I'm like, duh.
But sometimes people take it under the other names and don't realize it's the
okay.
same thing.
Okay.
So yeah, those gastrointestinal upsets, the pancreatitis, gallbladder, it can also, like I said, affect the renal system. So we want to make sure your kidneys are functioning well. We want to make sure you're really hydrated. So those are just some of the things that
so,
we watch out for.
So at your practice at Balanced Rejuvenation, which is in St. Pete, Florida,
yes.
What do you do to check all of those functions?
Well, regular visits where I'm going to ask about these symptoms and making sure that people know to call me or call the office if they are experiencing any of them, so that we can, you know, assess how bad is it. And most GI symptoms will pass within week, you know, a few days to even sometimes weeks. It usually will flare up if there's a dosage change,
okay.
and then they'll ease off. But if it is continuous or getting worse, then what we need to do is assess the dose of the medication and what else you're doing. Are you getting enough hydration? Are you eating enough? If you're nauseous and vomiting, it's going to lead to electrolyte imbalances, dehydration, which can cause the renal problems, the kidney function, and potentially hospitalization. And nobody wants that.
No.
So if people are nauseous, vomiting, having a lot of GI issues, they need to let their providers know so that we can help. There's medications that we can use and things that we can help, you know, kind of counsel people on what to do to minimize or avoid those side effects.
So I want to talk about socially. Why do you think that it's so controversial? Why do you think that people get pissed about it? You know, I am a photographer and I photograph women. And so, and I tend to get really close with my clients and they tell me all their stories, right? So I'll have somebody who will walk into my studio and for the very first time I've met them, they've said, I'm on Ozempic and I've lost X number of pounds. And they'll just tell me their life story. And I love it. I love hearing people's story. I love hearing what has motivated them to come to me to do a shoot, you know, how they're feeling about themselves. But sometimes people get really angry about it. And why do you think that is? Why do people care what other people are doing with themselves?
Well, that's how the world works, isn't it? We're always very concerned about what everybody
else
is doing.
I know. And I saw an interview recently with Kelly Osbourne, who I really like because she just says what's on her mind. And I'm kind of like that too. She just has not a lot of filter and just kind of says whatever she's thinking. And she says in her interview, and people may or may not agree with her, but she flat out says the people who are mad about it are people who are jealous or who can't afford it.
That's a perspective.
Exactly. That. I do too. I do too. But I see where she's coming from with it because it's people who maybe are curious and, you know, they've been busting their butt in the gym and they've meal prepped and they've done all the things and they're like, I've worked hard. You're being lazy. You're just lazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think that goes back to maybe that kind of age old philosophy we have of like fat shaming and, you know, saying, well, obviously they're just lazy or they're obviously eating really terrible and just, you know, won't admit it. Or, you know, we have these kind of societal misunderstandings about weight and why people gain weight and those kinds of things. So, you know, why people get upset about it. Some people, they think to themselves it's a cheat, you know, and if I worked really hard, why does somebody else get to kind of jump through that part and not have to work as hard as I did? Well, first of all, I mean, you know, you can't know what happens in another person's life
sure.
until you walk their shoes, right?
But everybody thinks they know.
Yeah. And so it's a little bit of that, and it is a little bit of that misunderstanding about what people go through. But this is a tool, right? Just like the weights at the gym are a tool for you to get stronger. Just like the foods that you choose are a tool to help you improve your nutrition. I look at it just like it's not always people's fault that they have high blood pressure. You know, you can have a genetic tendency to that, but I'm not going to say, well, you know, why should you get
Screw
hypertension
you.
medication?
Right.
And, you know, this person doesn't need it to control their blood pressure. You know, why some people get depression and have mental health issues. It's another stereotype that we have. You know, why do they need medications? Well, you know, people are different. People need different things. So instead of, you know, getting jealous or really angry about it, maybe we should support each other. You know, maybe we should be more inclusive.
We should do
and
that
more
with
supportive.
A lot of things in life, but I don't know that that's ever going to happen.
And I know some people, you know, like I said, most people are kind of, you know, a little upset about, I feel like I work really hard to maintain my weight and my health and things. So it feels like other people get an advantage. And nobody
that's
likes
life, right?
feeling like, yeah,
sure.
but nobody likes to feel that way. And some people, like you said, it's very inaccessible if you don't have the funds. So.
Right.
It can feel a little bit restrictive and like you're not in the club.
In the club,
you
yeah.
know? And the other thing is some people just really don't like needles and yeah. they don't want to go yeah. to the doctor. But another thing is sometimes people just think, well, you know, if they were healthier, they wouldn't need that. And you kind of make assumptions about what people do. So
what happens when you go off of it?
Yeah. So when
you just gain it all back, or is the, yeah. this is what I've thought about when I've been, you know, preparing for this and learning and talking to clients and friends mm-hmm. who are on it, is the mentality that you kind of are learning more about what your body actually needs in terms of nutrition. So you can mentally tell yourself, I'm full now.
Yeah.
And you can start reading your own triggers a little bit better. Like I don't need this much of a portion mm-hmm. because I know that when I had this much, I was okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right. A lot of it is dependent on successful lifestyle changes because like anything, the tool works the way the tool is designed to work. And without that tool, is your body going to feel a difference? Yes. But hopefully during the time when you've been on treatment and succeeding at the weight loss, you've also been incorporating the nutritional choices and the really good exercise choices and maybe working on your sleep and your stress and all the other things that you can kind of focus on to live a better and more healthy lifestyle. A4M had a very clear practice for weaning when you get to goals, so slowly decreasing the amount of medication so your body has time to adjust. And if
you don't just go off it.
No, not. I mean, you can, right? Because there's a lot of places where you can just go and pay your money and get the medication and then you walk out the door. And if you don't pay for it, you don't get it. I can't speak to what kind of weaning they have or titration off they have because that's not what I do. But I have a very careful weaning plan where we slowly decrease the amount and then we monitor to see, is there weight gain? Is there any rebound weight gain? If maybe it starts to kind of creep back a little bit, then we can look at maintenance dosing. And you can do that over time. So more space between the injections. So your body kind of has a little bit, but not as much as the regular. And then hopefully continue to incorporate those lifestyle changes to the point where you don't really need it.
So I'd be interested, and you may know this because obviously you know the data here, but what are the statistics on percentage of weight gain back after people have gone off?
So there's a really interesting research study that was done in April of 2021 called the STEP program, and it was the semaglutide treatment effect on people with obesity. STEP program started with 3 phases, ended up in 5 phases, and it is a really comprehensive look at patients using this medication for the treatment of obesity and weight management, and they also looked at the management of type 2 diabetes as well. But that study went over 68 weeks. And it included a randomized double-blind placebo-included trial, which is clinically like the highest level of looking at the medication. And they found that the placebo group with some exercise therapy and behavioral management lost just a little over 2% of their weight. And
the placebo group was 2%. Placebo. Okay.
So they were getting something that really wasn't medication, but they didn't know
They didn't know it. Okay.
And then those who actually got the semaglutide medication lost 14.9% of more weight. And so that's a huge difference.
Sure.
You know, we're talking about a 12, almost 13% difference. You don't see that kind of success with a lot of those studies. And then they followed it up to another 105 weeks to see, you know, how does this work long term? What are the continued
side effects? Once they were off of it.
Going off of it. And okay. they said there was some mild regain of weight, but oftentimes that was where they would go back and work with their providers on what's happening, looking at body composition analysis, looking at lifestyle, what can we do, maybe introducing some of that maintenance dosing. So, you know, it can be, I think so much of this is really dependent upon working closely with your medical team, your healthcare providers, your physicians, your nurse practitioners, to understand your body better. And like you said, recognizing the signals from your body and really kind of unlearning some of those behaviors. Mm-hmm. One of the things
There's behavioral change that's expected with it.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that I talk about that I learned in my training was looking at the reward cascade. In our brains, we often we equate food and reward, right?
Ice cream. Give me all the ice cream.
You see it every day and you feel it all the time. And we are that kind of culture and society.
Sure.
We want instant gratification.
Absolutely.
I did a good thing. I deserve a treat. You know, I worked hard.
Give me the dessert.
I should give myself something special. And so kind of looking at that, what are my triggers? What are the kinds of things that make me feel like I want to eat? And how does that reward work for me? So that I can learn to maybe change that reward cascade to something else. Like, what could I do instead of that? What could I replace
those things with? Buy a new purse.
Yeah. Well, see, there you've already got a plan.
Buy the shoes, ladies.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, sometimes it sounds simple, but thinking through the things that become automatic and we don't think about allows us to look at other choices. Because maybe it is that. Maybe, you know what, I did a good thing or I worked really hard. I'm going to put away $50 this week and I'm going to keep putting that away until I can go get that new purse
Sure.
or those new shoes or something, you know, do something for yourself that's positive that isn't necessarily food. Food is easy. It's available, but
it's
the
fast,
reward
it's
is
short
lived.
Right.
It's short term. You know, eating that pint of ice cream might feel good in the moment. It's not going to be a good reward every time you pick up that new purse or put those shoes on and look really hot.
Right.
So we got to try and like work with our own brains a little bit and kind of learn how to adjust that process in our mind about how we reward ourselves and how we take care of ourselves.
So years ago, I want to talk about weight loss medications are not a new thing.
No.
They've been around for forever.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember back in the day, Fen-Phen, remember that? But that was dangerous.
Yeah.
That was really, really dangerous.
A lot of negative side effects.
Mm-hmm. I think even death in some situations because what it did to people's
things.
Hearts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so how is semaglutide different than medications of the past? How is it safer?
Mm-hmm. Well, remember from the beginning when I talked about the fact that this is an incretin mimetic and it mimics the action of natural substances in the body. And that's the classification. So the GLP-1 and the incretin mimetics, that's what we call the classification of the medication. This is a different class of drugs, so meaning it's a different group, like a different family of drugs. The fen-phens, the phentermines, the different ones like Ally, all of those things, they're from different classes. And that means that the drugs that are used are chemically different and act in the body differently, and they also have different side effects. So the phentermine, for example, a lot of people with cardiac issues,
you know, or people
who have ADHD, I mean, they can't tolerate something that really stimulates them to that degree. And so this medication works in a whole different way on those three things that we talked about earlier. And that is a different way of acting in the body than these other medications that we've used in the past. Ally, for example, it is a gastric lipase inhibitor. So it blocks the digestion of fat. Well, we've heard about some of the really unfortunate side effects of that where people's bowels tend to just push it on through.
Yeah.
You know, so these are the differences. These medications work in different classes in different ways in the body. Some of them are side effects of well-known antidepressants. So I think it's called Contrave is the combination of bupropion, which is Wellbutrin, and naloxone, which is an opioid agonist. So it's a combination of things trying to hit different receptors. So it's acting on the body in different ways, and it's a side effect of medications that were used for other reasons. So then when they find, oh, this medication that we developed as an antidepressant also appears to have the effect of helping with weight loss, then they'll go back and do a little more research on that and look at getting approval for using it in different ways. And so their action, the way that they're chemically structured, and their side effects can be very different. Tesofensine is another one called Tesamet, combined with another medication, was originally studied to be used in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and they found that it helped with weight loss. So that's a different, that's an oral medication that people might be familiar with. Different class, different action in the body, different side effects.
I know earlier we were talking about accessibility and expense. Can you share a little bit about what does it cost? Roughly, I'm sure different practitioners charge different amounts, but tell me roughly what does it cost, and does insurance cover it for people?
So insurance will cover this medication if you meet the criteria. So if you have type 2 diabetes, if you meet those BMI criteria, if you have those coexisting conditions, and sometimes it's in the way that the medical provider looks at and diagnoses your clinical conditions and your risk factors. That can help get things covered under insurance. And every insurance plan in the world is different because never make any assumptions sure. about what they're going to do. So we do our best to add what we call the codes, the ICD-10 codes, which is something we tell the insurance about the individual with our medical diagnostic tools about their conditions and their risks. And that is intended to help the insurance say, oh, this is a good idea to use this. Maybe we'll
cover it. Because ultimately,
it's
the plan is for this to help make their life healthier.
Well, sometimes the way we logic things isn't the way insurance companies sure. logic mm-hmm. them. But yes, you're right. And so, like I said, when things are first developed, there's a lot of research, a lot of development. It's a high cost thing to do to develop a new drug. And that's why when you see brand new drugs hit the market, they can be very, very expensive. And until they're more widely used
mainstream
and understood, or generics come along and that branding is not the only thing that's available, that's when it becomes more accessible. The cost of it varies. Most of the things that I kind of, you know, and it again, like I said, depending on your insurance and your pharmacy, it can change slightly, but we know that these medications can cost over $1,000 a month.
Oh, wow.
So what we want to see, what I as a healthcare provider love to see, is more use of generics. So like I said, not the brand name.
The semaglutide instead of the Ozempic.
The semaglutide, the tirzepatide, the liraglutides. In that class, using the generics will often make them far more reasonable. So in that case, if you look around, what you'll find is if you see that generic name, then it's going to be a slightly lower cost, which may still cost somewhere around $400 to $700 a month, depending on the kind of program you have. Now, you see billboards everywhere that are advertising. I think I saw one that said Ozempic for $50 or something, and I was like, what? What is that?
Like there's something sketch going on
something,
there.
Yeah, there's something weird about that. And the other thing, I know that it's my personal bias, but I think that working closely with a medical provider that you have a relationship with who knows you and understands your medical condition and is concerned for you as a human being is the safest
valuable.
And the best way to do this.
Right.
No shade, but you know the clinics that make this readily available for people to come in, get an injection and leave. I really
There's no follow up.
I'm concerned about, you know, are they aware of what that person is, first of all, their medical conditions, and secondly, their level of preparedness for a medication like this. Are they really understanding how it's going to impact them? Do they know how to really use the medication properly, combined with really solid nutrition, with good exercise to stay healthy and to stay safe? And do they know how to let somebody know or who to let them know if they're not feeling good. You know, I have a very dear friend who was really just struggling with weight and had mental health issues, and you know, became a diabetic and those kinds of things. And he started taking the medication and he just kept dropping weight and weight, and I was really alarmed. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm taking the Ozempic. I'm like, okay. And he's like, yeah, it's working. I'm like, how do you feel? He's like, oh, I feel like garbage. You know, I'm nauseous all the time. I have no appetite. When I eat, I throw up. I just can't seem to, but it's working.
That sounds awesome.
And I was like, oh boy. Cause you know, and these were the kinds of things that triggered me to get involved in this, you know, because I saw people who were so affected by side effects, who were using it in a way that I consider to be medically unsafe. And so, you know, I had to pull them aside and say, listen, you know, you need a program that supports you, not just helps you lose weight at all costs or any cost.
Right.
Because the cost is really your future. And if you don't do this more safely, you are going to be so impacted down the road that I hate to say you might regret this, even though it's working right now. And so trying to help people plan ahead and use it, you know, I know it's expensive, but using it as an investment in your future health is one way to look at it. You know, I'm investing in my future health that I don't want to get the kinds of conditions that are related to obesity and diabetes, which are so damaging to the body and really affect our lifespan and how well we live during our lifespan. Maintaining that optimal health, maintaining your mobility, achieving your goals, those things are super important. And one thing that I do want to touch on, because, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about this and done a lot of research on it. One thing that isn't listed in the side effect profile that I think is really interesting, and they're looking into it more, is the effect on mental health. So there have been people who reported mood changes and suicidal ideation, and I think it's really important.
When they're on the medication.
Yes, but it's not been significant enough at this point for them to look at it as one of the more common side effects. But I think it goes back to, you know, first of all, when we have mental health challenges, are we properly taking care of ourselves?
That's a whole nother topic,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's a whole nother topic. But it also leads me into one of the things that I talk about with my patients, because I see it all the time. And I'm people who I would look at and say, like, you look beautiful, you look amazing, you look strong and healthy, and they're still not happy.
Right.
You know, they've got that stubborn 5 pounds, or the weight moved into a different place than it used to be, more in the belly than the booty kind of thing. And they're not happy. And so, you know, no medication changes how you see yourself.
Right.
No medication can make you feel better when you look in the mirror and you tell yourself that you don't look as good as you want to, or, you know, you kind of start giving yourself that negative talk. And I think that that's another really important part, is making sure that you're mentally handling things well.
It should go hand in hand, right? Like, it's oftentimes because of, like, what we were saying earlier with the stigma of society and just how other people feel so free about putting their thoughts and their opinions on you.
Right.
It's holistically, it all affects how we feel, you know? And I'm also of the mentality that it's none of your business what I do in my home in private. And
true.
So I don't have to answer to you, and I don't have to answer to anybody else. I'm going to do what makes me feel good about myself, you know?
Right.
And so if that means taking Ozempic or semaglutide or whatever it is, that's up to the person and their provider, you know?
Yeah. And that is important. And it's also hard, you know, it's easy to tell ourselves that, but then to really feel that way can be hard. And so you need a good relationship with the provider, a good support system. And I don't, you know, I know people like to hide that they're on medications because they don't want to admit it, right? Because going back to, like, the oppositional kind of feelings about it, oh, you know, people will get upset with me, or they'll think that I'm just cheating,
lazy
or whatever it is. But if you don't share what you're doing, sometimes it's hard to develop a support system for the wins, right? Having a good group of family, friends, people who can say, like, you're doing great. You know, I see what you're doing. I see how you're trying to take care of yourself and support you through that process, or recognize when you're not doing so good,
right?
Like my friend.
And call you out on it.
You know, and just say, listen, like, I'm not saying you have to stop, but what I want you to do is change the way you're doing it so that you feel better. You know, and it's important to have a good support system and to mentally support yourself.
So, Candace, are there any things that I did not ask you that you feel like people want to know, or are some of the trigger questions that you typically get that you feel like anybody who's watching this would be important for them to know, or just to educate themselves on?
I think sometimes people don't realize it's an injection, and that can be really intimidating. I remember learning to give injections when I was a nursing student 30 years ago, going, oh my gosh, that's so scary. It's not. It's pretty easy. And they're tiny needles, and I promise they really don't hurt.
If you've gotten your ears pierced,
yeah.
Oh, not much, quite as dramatic, worse, right? Yeah.
So the injection piece and the oral medications like pills are just not as great of an option. There are others. So if that's, I mean, they'll work, but they're not as effective, because I see some of those things advertised, like oral semaglutide. And yes, it's available, but I would have a conversation about, do I choose that versus another oral medication for weight loss might be just as good or maybe even more effective or more accessible, depending on insurance and medical conditions. And really, the big thing that I think is so important is nutrition and exercise. Like I said, and I'll say it as many times until people hear it the way that they need to hear it, your nutrition is critical. You are not going to have the appetite, right? So you're not going to eat the same amount of food. And that's how this works. But then you have to understand, I have no room for garbage calories. I have no room for empty nutrition. I have to be really thoughtful. When I eat, I have to choose my lean proteins. I have to choose things that are packed with vitamins and minerals and nutrients. And I have to give my body the resources that it needs, or it's gonna backfire.
Can people drink alcohol when they're on it?
Good question. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's some schools of thought will say no alcohol at all. And I don't think that's reasonable for a lot of people. You can drink alcohol on it. There's some thought that maybe that can increase hypoglycemia, meaning a low blood sugar, because certain things will affect the body and drive down the blood sugar levels. Wasn't a lot of data in the research that supported that, that alcohol itself would cause hypoglycemia. But I mean, like anything, it will absorb differently in the body when you're on a medication.
And it's empty calories.
And it is empty calories. So being more thoughtful about what you choose. But then, like I said, the interesting thing is that they're exploring how this medication works on cravings and addictions.
That's amazing.
So some people report that they feel less need to drink alcohol when they're on this if they were someone who drank more.
And you said something about smoking cigarettes.
And like I said, just anecdotal stuff that I kind of picked up here and there. So I'm not going to say none of that's official, but it's something that they're looking into, because, you know, we always want to try to find effective ways to help people manage addictions, which is a disease.
Sure.
So there is some potential for that, because the way it works in the brain, decreasing that appetite craving. So is it, you know, going to also work in similar ways for other kinds of cravings? Too much alcohol in any diet for any reason is not good. Sure. You know, and it's something that kind of pains me to say, because I'll admit I love a glass of red wine, and you know, that is, no alcohol is safe in any amount, you know, to excess, but you can have a little bit. But like anything, you know, moderation is key. Yeah. And to just know yourself, right? If you're eating less and your metabolism's changing because you're doing really well with this, your body might not manage alcohol in the same way that it used to. So being aware, like, maybe I can't drink what I used to without getting that impact and this, you know, the getting drunker faster than I used to. So we just want to be a little bit careful about that, making sure that you are cautious the first few times that you drink when you're on the medication.
This has been so helpful, and I think a lot of people are going to find it so educational and hopefully help destigmatize it a little bit as well. Tell everybody how they can get in touch with you and how they can learn more and potentially work with you and Dr. Alms as well.
Yeah, well, I am a consultant at Balanced Rejuvenation. I'm a nurse practitioner. I work with Dr. Deanna Alms, who's been working in this line of functional and integrative medicine for over 8 years. And our practice focuses on optimizing health and wellness. You know, we pride ourselves on being able to dig a little deeper when people say, I've been to doctors and I keep saying I don't feel good, and they keep telling me that there's no indication that anything's really wrong, I still don't feel good, we dig a little deeper and we do a lot more testing and we try to find out exactly what it is. And I will tell you that almost every time, the patients are always right. They know their bodies.
Sure.
You know, and there is definitely always something we can improve. So we focus on integrative and functional medicine, and we are in St. Petersburg, Florida. You can call our office, and our office number is 727-522-1972, or you can look up balancedrejuvenationmd.com, and we're online. We're actually going to do some webinars about the GLP-1s and the weight loss medications. We're going to, you know, try and help educate people and support them to be successful.
I'm super excited that you were here today, yeah, and I'm appreciative of your time. So thank you so much.
Do you want to add something, whether you want to add it or not? I was going to say, you know, I can talk about my own experience.
Oh, I would love for you to talk about your own experience. Please do.
Because, you know, sometimes that's helpful. Sometimes
yeah, absolutely.
It's not. So, you know, when I was thinking about having this talk with you today, one of the things that occurred to me, which is going to hopefully make you laugh and think about what we talked about, is like, I thought maybe we should do like confession time.
Yeah.
That I use the medication myself. And then I thought, no, that
is coffee talk. Coffee talk. Yeah, coffee confessions.
Talk. Confessions and coffee talk. But then I thought, like, you know, that is such a good example of the internal monologue and societal expectations of these medications, because why do I feel like I need to confess that?
Right.
I don't.
Right.
I'm a medical professional who understands how to use the medication safely.
Yeah.
And I understand the effects on my body and the goals that I have. So I started using the medication not that long ago, just less than a month, because I am someone who has worked with my weight my whole life. You know, I've gone up, I've gone down. When I was in my 20s, I could just hit the gym really hard and go crazy on the cardio.
Skip a couple of desserts.
Dump all the pounds, and I was fine. And then in my 30s, it was like, oh, I'll take some of the medications, get a little boost, do a lot of cardio, make some changes, and then I would lose the weight. Well, then I got a really sedentary job during, and then COVID hit, and the stress went bananas. I was somebody who worked harder during COVID than anything else.
Right.
I envied people who were cleaning their closets, but I was doing really important work with people who needed support during COVID. And, you know, as I aged and as my stress levels changed, my metabolism went down,
right?
My hormones went down, and I just couldn't shake the weight, you know. And I make jokes about, like, my superpower is metabolizing fat out of black coffee. I don't know how, but it is my superpower, because there were literally days where I had nothing but black coffee and
right.
I was gaining weight.
Yeah.
So I did a really, I consider, brave thing. I changed my job and I changed my life. I fixed my sleep, because sleep is the most critical thing you can do.
Yeah.
It's where you give your body time to heal, repair, restore, plan, do all the important things. I fixed my sleep. I changed my work. I decreased my stress. I balanced my hormones. I started working on my cortisol. I started doing things like yoga and meditation. I worked on exercise and nutrition, and I feel like I'm doing everything right. And the scale didn't move, and my size didn't change. Yeah. And so I'm thinking, like, again, this is the conundrum of, if I'm doing everything right, why isn't it working?
Right.
And then I learned more about this medication, because I was super skeptical when it started.
Sure.
And I, like I said, the same monologue plays in my brain. It's
right.
A cheat. What if it doesn't work? What if it's just really hard on the body? I don't know about this. So Dr. Ohms and I decided to get into this, because we were seeing other patients using it, or our patients using it from other sources and not doing well, or that friend of mine who was really struggling.
Right.
And I thought, you know, I can learn about this. I can do this, and I can do this for people safely. And then I thought, I'm going to walk the journey with them. You know, this is something I want to try and see. And I will tell you that it immediately started making a difference, even though my weight has not changed, because I haven't been on it a very long time. But I immediately felt a sense of having more access to my energy. And it's a weird thing to say, but it just felt like my energy was there. You know, when I got up in the morning, I felt a little perkier. I moved through my day a lot easier. I had a little extra oomph that I didn't have before.
Okay.
And I'm still on the titration up to the dose where I'll get to the effective change range.
So it's only been a month.
Yeah, a very short period of time. But I just wanted to share that because I was very skeptical. And because I am one of those people, I need to be convinced with the science, with the evidence. I really want to know more about how does it work? Why does it work? What do I need to know? How do I be safe? You know, what is this going to do to my long-term health? And, you know, and the thing is, too, one of the hardest things in weight loss is mentally committing to being able to make those lifestyle changes.
Right.
I think one of the things that maybe I didn't touch on as much is when you really want to lose the weight, are you committed to do the things it's going to take to do that and to sustain it? Or are you just looking
for a quick fix?
A quick fix, which I understand why people want it.
Of course.
And why people need it.
Of
and
course.
That's what this does. It's the boost. But you also need to implement those other things to be successful. Because my goals are really about being as healthy as I can be, being more mobile. I love to go hiking. My husband and I, we love to travel. We love to hike. I've hiked the Inca Trail in Peru. I've hiked around all over the world. And I want to keep doing that for my whole life.
A long
life.
Time, yeah.
So this is the kind of thing I want to do to improve my own body's health. And I am doing it in the way that I prescribe it for other people. So I can really walk that walk. And you know,
and
I might,
then through time, you'll experience what your successful patients are experiencing.
I hope so.
And then really be able to speak of it.
Yeah, you know, and to model that for my patients, to say, like, I understand that it is hard, and I know that it's difficult to implement those changes, but I'm going to be here with you, and we're going to do it. So,
and I think that's impactful and empowerful for your patients, and thank you for sharing that with us, because I feel like when you can walk the walk and talk the talk, you know, that makes a big difference, and that will be another reason why your patients will trust you.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
Because like I said, sometimes it's hard to look at somebody who is heavier and say like, well, do I trust that you really know? Because, you know, there's the judginess that goes on and we think the things. But I understand what it's like to struggle, you know, and to feel like you're losing control of it. And I also know what it's like to take different ways of trying to do this. And I hope that, you know, that helps people feel like I'm in their corner.
Much for sharing that with us. I really appreciate your time today, and thank you guys for joining us on another episode of Uncut with Andy Diamond, where we are here to inspire, educate, and entertain. And we will see you next time.